Lunch with Pippa Hudson. And now,
Consumer Talk, featuring Wendy Nola.
It's always wonderful to welcome Wendy Nola to the show, and she's standing by for a real choice-assorted Consumer Talk today. Or rather, Wendy, I think we should say a mixed bag of quality streets, which would be the appropriate reference after your chocolate investigation for us last week. Thank you for stepping in and getting hold of Nestlé so quickly to set our minds at ease.
You're welcome. I could detect genuine distress on your part, and you weren't alone with the Bitumen Crisp scare. But yeah, no, they're going to be with us for a while, the Bitumen Crisp.
Thank goodness for that. Now, we're not talking chocolate today. We are going to be picking up on a Cape Town pensioner's fibre dilemma, another case of what to do if the shoe doesn't fit, and then the fake consumer review quandary, as well as open line time as well. If you're wanting to call in, the number is 021-446-0567. And before we do any of that, I want to just share with you an email that's come in, Wendy, from Linda and Dave. David wrote to say, it was advice on your program that prompted my wife and I to seek help from Wendy Nola regarding a cruise refund. May I please put on record that Wendy was truly amazing in assisting us. She must have a plethora of problems on her desk each day, and she dealt with us so personally. Indeed, it almost appeared that we were her soul case. Nothing was too much trouble, and she is the epitome of what good service might be. Needless to say, we have received our full refund this week, as was promised by the company after Wendy intervened on our behalf. What an example of service delivery she is, and we both wish strength to her already powerful arm. And that is from a grateful pair of pensioners, Linda and Dave. Wendy, I absolutely endorse everything they've said, and thank you so much for fighting the good fight for our listeners as you do.
Thank you. That was very touching. I just wish I could clone myself several times and be able to do more. But it's very gratifying when people, when I am able to help and people are so grateful. Thank you for sharing that, Pippa.
Well, thank you, David, for sending that mail. It's not often that people do take the time to do that. So thank you for that. Okay, Wendy, let's start with the fibre story, shall we?
Okay, so it was Sun Valley pensioner Mick Gary who wrote to us saying that with his son just having finished matric and needing to study online, he decided it was time that they had fibre installed at their home. He wrote, I contacted Frogfoot Fibre, who installed the fibre into my house, but one of their providers Mind My Speed at the big, sorry, by one of their providers, they used Mind My Speed. That was at the beginning of February. Because I only receive a finite state pension, the monthly cost was of great importance. So in collaboration with my son, we decided on a deal for 100 megabytes per second at 895 rand per month. The only terms and conditions they stated was that the installation was free, provided that we didn't cancel within a year. Mind My Speed then issued a statement that because Frogfoot Fibre had increased their charges, they were going to increase my monthly payments to 1,038 rand. That's up from just under 900. I've informed them that there's no way I can afford this increase. Can they legally do this? He says, the possibility of a price increase was not disclosed to me before signing up and would have made a difference to my decision as to which package I signed up for.
Okay, now when it comes to technology queries, we often turn to my broadband editor at large, Jan Vermeulen. And Wendy, he has been as obliging as ever with this one, hasn't he?
Yes, as extra mile as ever. I initially just asked him to share some contact details with us to follow up on because we're used to doing our own research on these cases. But typically, he went the extra mile, as I said, and he did the whole investigation for us. He said it did help that he happens to be a Mind My Speed customer on Frogfoot himself. So apart from his journalistic interest in these matters, he is also and has been personally affected. In fact, he'd written a report on this issue, which I think Mick had actually read prior to coming to us.
Okay, so, well, we've got Jan on the line with us now. Jan Vermeulen is my broadband's editor at large. And Jan, thank you firstly for always being available to help and for really going the extra mile on this one. Welcome to the show. Let's take a look at the deal. I mean, on the face of it, it sounds like Mick has probably got some grounds to feel somewhat aggrieved.
Yeah, it's only a pleasure, and yes, I understand completely why people are upset. People in the internet service provider industry were upset There's a whole story behind the story here, which I don't think we have time for today, unfortunately. But the thing, especially given the timing, I think is what hits people the hardest. Before the lockdown, before COVID was as prominent a talking point as it is now, Frogfoot actually announced that it was planning to hike prices in South Africa. And so there's actually, from as best I could piece together, there's a few places where failures have occurred here. And so firstly, Frogfoot issued a notice in February that it wants to hike prices in May. And sent that to ISPs, and ISPs were meant to communicate that to their subscribers. But then the lockdown happened, regulations were issued that stopped any communications provider, including normal fiber and ADSL ISPs, from increasing prices. And so all of that was put on hold. Then when the regulations changed, all of this was uncorked again, and the ISPs could increase their prices, but they hadn't actually, because everything was put on hold back in March, they hadn't actually informed their subscribers, hey, this price increase is coming. Subscribers could have been informed since March or February even already that a price increase was coming, but it's been placed on hold because of the regulations.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. So it was always there. It just didn't get properly communicated because of the unique circumstances of the lockdown. Is Frogfoot the only one? I'm sure they're not the only one who's been affected in this way.
No. So Vumatel also had price increases coming that they've put on hold. As best I can tell, Vumatel has not put through its price increases, though. Octotel has just announced, we just published a story on Octotel, okay, who is also adjusting its prices. And so, we do want broadband prices to come down in South Africa, but the reality is that the economy and the circumstances just aren't allowing it. And if you look at the fiber industry as a whole, this isn't an isolated case of one fiber network provider increasing prices. They all are, with the exception of OpenServe, but that's because they were very expensive to begin with.
Uh-huh. Okay. Wendy?
I think it's interesting, just before we carry on with the next case, Jan, that these aren't contracts that people found. They're not locked in for a year or two or more. They can opt out, but if they do it within a year, they have to pay for the hardware. Am I right?
Yes, and the installation fee. So every fiber network operator has its own regime for installations. Frogfoot is better than most, but it's quite expensive at 1,150 Rand, but that covers a large amount of trenching. That covers, I believe, the last time we discussed this, right, around 50 meters of trenching. And so other providers will have different prices. Now, what's happening, and the reason most end users don't even know about this, is most ISPs eat this cost. And then what they do is that they say, cool, as long as you're with me for a year, I've made up that money and a bit of profit. But if you leave me within 12 months, then you're costing me money, and then I've got to recoup that cost.
Okay, that seems fair.
Okay.
Yeah,
that I think most people would accept as a reasonable term. So, I mean, long and short of it, does Mick have any options here? Jan, if he feels, he's obviously feeling very aggrieved by what's happened. He's stuck with an amount now that is really unaffordable for him. What are his options?
Right. And I went and had a look at the various options out there. As I said, I'm with Mind the Speed myself. I switched because they were the cheapest, not just a cheaper option, the cheapest option available on Frogfoot, bar none. And I wanted to see whether the quality, whether you get what you pay for, whether you get good quality service. And it turns out you get good quality service. And so I've stuck with them. And so I went and looked at it and did a pricing comparison. And really, there is nothing in the 100 megabit per second uncapped range that's going to come near to what they were paying before. So the prices, to give people an idea, went from around 900 Rand a month to 1,100 Rand a month. That is a significant increase for somebody on a fixed income who's on pension, right? And so the options on the table, unfortunately, from the pricing comparisons I've done, is to is to reduce the package, is to cut the speed that you're getting. So you go down to about 20 megabits per second, or 50 if you want to splurge a bit more. But 20 megabits per second is nothing to sneeze at. And that will then bring your costs back in line to what they were before the price increase.
Okay. Wendy, any follow-ups from your side?
Just to say thank you very much for doing all of that. You're eminently more qualified than we are to dig down into all of that. And we put all that on your behalf to Mick, and he's come back to us with a decision, but I'm hoping he's going to be able to tell us about that himself.
We're just busy connecting through to him now. Okay. I think he is available on the line. Mick is a reminder, the person who sent us this query in the first place. Yes, we do have him on the line. Mick in Sun Valley, good afternoon. And thanks for raising this issue. Mick, having seen the feedback that Jan has put together on what your options are going forward, have you made a decision on what you're going to do?
Well, thanks very much anyway for taking my call. And thanks for Wendy for the fantastic job she did. And of course, Jan van Vuelen for all his work. Well, under the circumstances, I think, like I said to Wendy, I'm going to leave, you know, just bite the bullet. And it's better the devil be you know than you. Mm. And, you know, to go for another one, it's, as I say, it's better the devil you know type of thing. So at the moment, I've decided to keep with my speed at what I've contracted to.
So you'll be sticking with the package you're on, despite the rather bitter pill you've had to swallow. And your son, I believe, is going to be going off to university later in the year. So perhaps you might be in a position to downgrade at that point, do you think, Mick?
Well, hopefully, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
But one of my concerns with is the fact that, you know, what they say is that Stella Abrams, who's the Minister of Communications, stated that, you know, in April about no one can increase the prices. And yet in May, the acting Minister of Communications, Jackson Mthembu, what they say is that he deleted that line that no contracts will be affected. Now, did he actually say that? Did he actually say, I'm deleting this line? Or was it inadvertently left out?
Jan, do you have any insight into that? I mean, the regulations have been as holy as Swiss cheese at the best of times, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if something was accidentally let out and left out and put back in a subsequent reprint. But do you have any insight into what happened there?
So no, I haven't actually specifically asked Jackson Mthembu or the team at the Department of Communications about that, the question specifically as phrased. But to give some insight, the way these amendments work is when you are deleting something, it specifically states that it's getting deleted. And so it would be very surprising to me if something was accidentally deleted out of the regulations, because it's something that has to be explicitly stated. It says, you know, this part of the regulations are being deleted and replaced with this.
Correct.
And so I think Jackson Mthembu knew exactly what he was doing when those regulations were promulgated.
Okay. Mick, I'm really sorry. I mean, it's an awful predicament to be left in, and we really feel for you. But thank you so much for raising the issue so that we could get the insight Jan has shared with us this afternoon and others can learn from it. You're not alone. I mean, I had an email in a little bit earlier in the show from Pam, who was also complaining about midterm changes in costing, etc. And of course, I can't find the email now, so I'll do a quick search while we talk. But there was an interesting email in from Nikki, who had some positive fibre feedback. Nikki said she's been with Cell C Fibre for a few years and she has been very satisfied with them. She said, we upgraded just before lockdown from a 2020 to a 50-50 package, and then at the beginning of lockdown they upgraded everyone to one tier above what they'd been paying for. So she's been very happy with Cell C. Here we go. I found Pam's email. And I don't know if you'd like to comment on this, Jan. Pam said, I've just received a letter from Vodacom stating that from the 1st of August, I will revert to a lower speed unless I wish to pay extra. I actually didn't know I was on a faster speed. It's as slow as it's ever been. And she said, in fact, she had contacted Vodacom several times last year since having fiber installed, because although she was paying extra, she had noticed no difference whatsoever in the speed. And she says they were full of excuses like general reception in my area and that it's because my laptop is too old. I've given up trying to get an answer from them. But she feels a bit aggrieved that she is going back to a lower speed unless she wants to pay more. Is that a fairly common complaint, Jan?
No, that's fairly unusual, but it depends on this is a strange case, because the words like coverage are being thrown around there, that suggests something cellular. But I mean, if you're talking about fixed speed, then that's fiber, right? So I'll definitely have to get more information about the specific case, because what does happen in certain places in early fiber deployments, Vodacom, MTN and others locked down, got themselves like a little localized monopoly on certain complexes and estates.
Right.
And then there's no competition on the service layer, so different ISPs can't come in and compete because they've got this exclusivity agreement with the estate owners. So I'd have to find out exactly what the situation is there, and perhaps we can even follow up at Vodacom to find out what's happening in that area that's causing the slowdowns and that's resulted in the downgrade. To the point of the subscriber on Cell C whose speeds were upgraded before lockdown, we've seen a lot of fiber network operators actually offering that. Frogfoot is one of them, since we're talking about them today, but others have done the same, Link Africa and Vumatel. A lot of those promotions are coming to an end soon, but a lot of those fiber network operators have also actually said, we are going to continue to extend this promotion, and we'll revise it on a month-to-month basis, you know, because of people's needs. And so in Mick's case, because he's paying for 100 megabits per second, they're actually getting 200 megabits per second if their service is anything like mine, because that's what I'm getting.
Okay, thanks for that insight. Very quickly, one last question before we must go to news. Vic is asking on the email, is it true that ADSL is going to be out in September if fiber is available in your area?
Yes, yes, that is 100% true. The communication from Telkom has been quite confused in this regard, but that is the essence of it. If ADSL is no longer the only option in your neighborhood, they are going to switch you over. So if fiber is available in your neighborhood, they're going to discontinue ADSL completely. In fact, they're going to pull up the copper cables and sell them and encourage people to switch over to fiber where it's available. Some neighborhoods where there's no fiber might also be affected, because the copper gets stolen so much in those neighborhoods that Telkom just can't replace it anymore. The copper is degraded to a point where it's just not serviceable anymore.
Jan, as always, thank you so much for the effort you've put in. Jan Vermeulen is the editor-at-large of My Broadband and really went the extra mile on this particular case for us. Greatly appreciated, and thanks for tackling those few off-the-cuff questions that came in as well.
Cape Talk.
Consumer Talk.
Call now 021-446-0567.
Hi, Pippa. That's a very interesting conversation with Jan Vermeulen. I just wanted to say that I find it quite difficult, especially when it comes to the idea of Telkom wanting everybody to switch over to fiber. In Africa, we as a family have opted to stick to our ADSL, because then we can still keep our landline, because if there's load shedding and there's an emergency at home, we won't be able to make a call, may it be to an ambulance, to a doctor, to the police station, whatever, because cellular network is very weak when there's load shedding in our specific area. So I don't know how we're going to bypass that. I don't think we are ready as a country to switch over completely to fiber, especially with Eskom as the way it is.
And that was a really interesting comment about the emergency calls. Wendy, we've heard this before from people who are really left in dire circumstances when previous communication networks are stripped away.
Absolutely. And I think all of us have experienced this in not exactly emergency situations, but just trying to go about our business with the connectivity we rely on, and suddenly there's load shedding and all the networks say, you know, things go wobbly. There's nothing they can do about it, especially when they're extended, you know, from stage two upwards rather. So, yeah, I think it's something people more qualified than I are going to need to apply their minds to, because we can't have a situation where, you know, during load shedding, people aren't able to get in touch with the people they need to. So, yeah, it is a very real problem in this country.
Also an interesting SMS in from someone saying, we live in St. Francis Bay, lucky you. We rely on our Telkom ADSL lines and would love to go with an optic fibre, but we don't know how on earth they're going to get the fibre over the canal bridges. I would have loved to ask Jan how they do that, if they can do that. He's not with us anymore, though, so perhaps we can try and find out behind the scenes. It is a very, very interesting question. Look, it can't be unique to St. Francis Bay. Marina de Gama's got waterways in between homes, doesn't it? How do they manage it there? Anybody who knows from experience and can tell us what the solution is, please drop me an SMS to 31567. In the meantime, we're going to move away from fibre to the story of the shoes that didn't fit, Wendy.
Yes, I wanted to chat about this case because it's always, well, I know from my inbox that this right of return business remains the most misunderstood section of the Consumer Protection Act. People and shopkeepers alike have, by and large, they just don't understand in what circumstances they are legally allowed to take something back and when they are not. In fact, most people think they can take things back under any circumstances and get a refund, and that's very, very far from the legal position both here and anywhere else in the world. So this was a case Rodney Jacobs wrote into us and he wanted our advice on. He said he'd been given a Christmas gift of a pair of Timberland shoes in his regular size of 8. They were a gift, so he hadn't tried them on before that purchase was made. And he also didn't wear them immediately, leaving them in the box in his cupboard for several months. And as I'll get to later, that is never a good idea with any purchase or gift. And in fact, Rodney only wore those shoes for the first time when he went back to work as lockdown eased on the 1st of June. So lockdown did exacerbate this case somewhat.
Yeah.
The first time he wore them, they felt okay. By the time he got to his third wear, they definitely weren't okay. And his heel was lifting out of the shoe. I'm sure we've all experienced that at some time. And that was just making them not fit for his purpose, but very distinctly different from being not fit for purpose in general, which is what the CPA covers. There was no inherent defect in the shoe. They just weren't a right fit for him. He was asked, he took it up with Timberland, their head office, and they asked him to drop off the shoes at the waterfront store. He'd purchased them, and he was later told that because the shoes had been worn, they could not be exchanged or refunded. His question to us was, but I told them up front that the shoes had been worn, so if they knew that, what did they want to assess? I'm very proud and happy to say that Pippa beat me to the response. I mean, I suddenly remembered about the case and thought this would be a good case to highlight yet again the refund right issue. I Googled Timberland, and there I came across Pippa's very perfect, spot-on response to Rodney. You're making me redundant, Pippa.
No, I was going to say, I've had a very good teacher, Wendy. I got Rodney's email and I thought, well, I'm going to spare Wendy the legwork, if you'll pardon the pun, because I know how to answer this one.
It was fantastic. You're setting yourself up now for a repeat performance, but won't you share what you told Rodney and what his rights were or weren't in this case?
Okay, so what I said to Rodney on my reply is that, firstly, in terms of what head office wanted to assess, probably they wanted to check that there wasn't something wrong with the shoes that was making them uncomfortable, maybe a loose seam somewhere or something, a stitch sticking out. And that wasn't the case. It was very clear here that the problem was the shoe was not a good fit for his foot. There was nothing inherently wrong with the shoe. And I said to him, if there is no actual defect with the shoe, the store isn't obliged to exchange them or to refund it, because the shoe is fit for its purpose as a usable shoe. The fact that it didn't fit Rodney's particular feet didn't change that. And as you said, Wendy, I think this is something a lot of consumers get confused about, because they know somewhere in their head that the Consumer Protection Act requires the store to offer you the choice of a refund, replacement, or a repair if there's something wrong with the item they sold you. But it's only if there is something wrong with the item.
Yes, and that is exactly it, nail on head. And since this act came into effect in April of 2011, gosh, it'll be 10 years next year.
Yeah.
This, I cannot, understand where consumers get this idea from. The closest I can get is that they're confusing a right with a consumer customer service. So many stores will allow you to take back non-defective merchandise. Perhaps they're not making it clear that this is a customer service, because what they do is they're normally conditions, right? Number one condition being that they have to be able to resell the merchandise that you didn't want, but that is otherwise fine. So in Rodney's case, because he'd worn the shoes, clearly that wasn't the case. They couldn't resell them. So I think that's where the confusion comes in, that people now think that that is their right because one store did that. But even the stores that take back, very few, if any, will actually refund you. They don't want to lose the sale completely, so they'll offer you your choice of a replacement, the shoes that do fit you, or a credit voucher, which is actually, you know, going above and beyond, because legally they can say we're not taking that back at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is in a nutshell. Thank you, Rodney, for giving us the opportunity to repeat this, because, as I say, 9 years on, it's still the most misunderstood section of the act, and what we're entitled to in terms of returns. Yeah.
Well, there's an interesting caveat here. I felt bad because I knew the answer I was giving Rodney was not the answer, obviously, that he was hoping for. What I did manage to find was a website full of tips on how to make a too big shoe fit, including putting insoles in and other various tricks that involve putting the shoes in the freezer when wet. And anyway, I sent all of that to Rodney, and he said he's going to give it a try, and he's also going to have a chat with his podiatrist about it, which I think is a very good idea, because particularly if you're on your feet all day at work in shoes that don't fit, you're asking for trouble with your back. So thank you. Duval's actually just SMS'd to say if you insert two inner soles into each shoe, he might be able to get away with it. So I'm not sure if Rodney's listening and wants to try that one. It was one of the things suggested on that site, Duval. So if you've been in this predicament and you'd like to know what the options are, just Google shoes too big and you'll find lots of lovely listicles to read.
Well, I mean, Wendy, it's real extra mile stuff, but I just want to say, I mean, I'm going to actually try the freezer thing, because I paid a lot of money for a pair of Doc Martens that I love, but my feet are quite narrow, and so they are my size, but I've done the inner sole thing, but I'm most definitely going to try the freezer thing as well. Let's say with the Doc Martens at your feet.
And Doc Martens last forever as well, so it's one you do want to use. Okay.
And
well,
my feet aren't growing. Yeah, so I just wanted to end off by just underlying the issues here and what Rodney's case has taught us. So always engage with a product that you bought yourself or been gifted immediately. Do not put them, in the case of shoes, away, because if they are defective, you only have 6 months in which to return them for your choice of a refund, replacement, or repair. So by June 1, if those shoes had proven to have the faulty stitch or the something sticking out, Rodney would just about have had time, a few weeks in which to take them back for a refund if he'd wanted one at that point. But if they are not defective, as in Rodney's case, but still in a saleable condition, unfortunately his weren't, most stores will take them back for an exchange or credit voucher, as I said, as a customer service, but they usually only do so within 30 days of purchase. So if you've put gift or your purchase away, that 30 days will have expired and you won't be able to exchange them for something that is more suitable for you.
Okay, thanks. So, Rodney, lots of lessons for all of us to learn from your experience, and I hope you do find a way of making the Timberlands fit your feet so you can get good use out of them.
Consumer Talk. Open line.
Call 021-446-0567.
While we wait for our first open line calls to come through, Wendy, you wanted to touch on the issue of fake customer reviews again.
I did, and it was a case that I was asked to investigate that made me think it's a good time to remind people about this, because I'm always saying, and it's just unfortunately a lot more scams going around now during this pandemic, I'm always saying to people, before you engage with anybody, especially on somebody advertising their offerings, goods or services online, and you haven't dealt with them before, please do some thorough homework before you make that payment. And one of the things you can do is go onto various complaints websites, the main one being Hello Peter, of course. But unfortunately, the dodgy service providers know this. And so they'll go on, and if they see some negative ones, what they'll tend to do, many of them, is do some fake fake rave reviews. And so you'll get a scenario where you see one-star reviews, because it's nothing less than one, and people saying, watch out, these people rip me off. And then you'll see this company offered me the most amazing service. So grateful, absolutely tremendous, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And that's usually a sign that those rave reviews are not genuine. It brings their service rating up to something around 3 rather than a 1, which would be a red flag. So I had a case where somebody asked, he'd been found a service online that offered to do UIF applications on your behalf. He and his wife had had to retrench their domestic worker, and he wanted to make the UIF application claims process a bit easier for her. So he paid 895 rand for this one-off service, one-time payment. Nothing happened. Went back and was told, no, you must make another payment of 800 and something because to capture her banking details, the retrenched worker, because that was a separate department, at which point he said to me, this is fishy. I cut my losses at this stage. I asked our dear friend, labor lawyer, Michael Bagram, about the case, and he said, well, this is illegal to start off with. You can't... the UIF does not deal with third party making claims on behalf of someone else. It's something you have to do yourself. So that was that. And then I went and looked on Hello Peter, and there were several other complaints from people who had the same experience with this company, and then the 5-star raves. Mm-hmm. So I went to Hello Peter CEO Alan Rom, who's always very receptive of such reports. And what they do is... They have some sort of digital solutions to flag this fake review thing, but obviously they're not foolproof, and they rely on members of the public, and this is what I wanted to put out, to alert them when there seem to be some dodgy 5-star reviews relating to a company. Anyway, in this case, what they do is they will contact the person who posted the review and ask them for proof that they actually did business with that company, an invoice or something similar. And in this case, neither of, I don't know how many there were, 2 or 3 of the rave reviewers just didn't respond. Mm. And so they removed the reviews. And I just wanted to alert people, number one, to be on the lookout for that phenomenon. And if you see it and it looks dodgy, to tell Hello Peter so that in the interest of everybody else wanting to rely on the service, that they root out this fake review nonsense.
Okay, thanks for the heads up on that, Wendy. Appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to go first to Rebecca's call from Kenilworth, because Rebecca has an issue that sounds like it speaks directly to the issue of replace, refund, repair, etc. Okay. Rebecca in Kenilworth, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Fipa. I bought a stove at Haifa Corporation on a 4th or a 5th. Then on the 23rd of May, and I returned the stove. I went to tell them that I'm going to return the stove. On the 3rd of June, then I returned the stove them. That mini oven, it's just on and off. You can't turn it down. You can't turn it up. As soon as you put it on, then it goes on. The worst part is that 2 plates, they're connected together. So you can't put 1 to simmer and 1 to cook. Okay. And then they told me that that's how the stove works, is an energy saver or something like this. They can't refund me or give me another stove. They would rather I must take the stove because their supplier doesn't want to refund them, so they can't refund me either. They got a stove since the 3rd of 6th of June, and they have never even contacted me to say what they're doing with the stove. The stove is at that. Is at the shop, at the Haifa Corporation.
What would you advise Rebecca to do, Wendy?
Well, on Rebecca's account, that stove certainly sounds defective to me. Although with an oven, it is, if you talk, the oven itself, if it's switching on and off, well, obviously it will do that to regulate the temperature, otherwise it will just carry on getting hotter and hotter and hotter. So all stoves will do that. The point is whether it's keeping the required temperature or not. So I would have to make absolutely sure that this is a case of a defective product rather than not understanding how it works, if you're with me. Mm-hmm. But certainly there's no excuse for failing to communicate further about the issue if the customer is not happy with the response. So what I can suggest, Rebecca, if you've had you already had correspondence with the company, if you would just forward it to me, I have a media liaison contact person at that company, and I will pursue it directly with them.
Thanks for that offer. Wendy, Rebecca, if you'll just hold the line, my producer is going to take your details and explain to you how to reach out to Wendy. I'm going to say it on air as well so that everybody else can hear the details. But just to help you chat, take down the correct address to forward the story, and Wendy can look into it for you. If you do want to raise an issue with Wendy, the email address is consumer@nola.co.za. KNOWLER. consumer@nola.co.za. Please put Cape Talk in the subject line and a word or two about the nature of the problem. So in Rebecca's case, she's going to go Cape Talk defective stove, and Wendy will know to look out for that mail. Rebecca, I see you're on the line with my producer now. Thank you. So please do send us that follow-up. Okay, next we go to Anthea in Somerset West, and it's a car battery at the heart of the story, I believe. Anthea, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I did send Wendy an email. It's about a battery that I bought from Battery Wolf in Strand, the owner being Gareth. And I bought the battery on the 22nd of February. While in lockdown, it went flat. So a friend charged the battery for me. Mm-hmm. And now about 2 weeks ago, and I do take it for a drive every day. 2 weeks ago, the battery went flat. I couldn't get hold of Gareth, so I had to phone the AA. And in the meantime, Gareth got my message, and he phoned me. And he said, don't panic, be calm. I'm bringing you a new battery. Not very friendly. So I had to cancel AA, and he came. He fitted the battery, and he told me that he will not do this again if the battery goes flat. And as I said, the battery is, 6 months old, 7 months old? So what am I to do if the battery goes flat? It's not anything electric. That's why I bought it. It's a Ford car Fiesta. It's rolled down, up and down the windows, no alarm, no electric central locking, nothing. That's because I had a Jetta executive before, and it was just too much trouble. So what are my options here if something happens again?
Okay. When was that battery replaced, Anthea? When they came to your...
Replaced 2 weeks ago. I sent you an email.
Okay. 2 weeks ago, okay.
Sorry about that. I haven't responded. So the CPA will give that battery 6 months life, which will, if you bought it in February, it's still valid. But all battery manufacturers provide their own warranties on that battery, which I stand to be corrected because it's not something that you deal with all that often. Do you know what have you investigated what warranty that battery?
And yes, do you know what battery. The warranty is on the battery itself?
Yes, yes. 30 March 2021, he said himself. I have it on record. It's a year guarantee.
Okay. That's fairly standard. I've just literally replaced one 2 weeks ago as well, and it was a 1 year guarantee. So Wendy,
I'm running out of time. There's an opportunity for teaching on this, and that your new battery does not. It inherits the remainder of the battery warranty and the original battery. So in other words, you haven't got a year from 2 weeks ago. You've got a year from February when you bought the battery. So your warranty is in place until February, and the supplier has no right to say, I'm not doing this for you again. That's the short answer, because unless he can prove there's something that you're doing to cause the battery to run out, which doesn't sound feasible to me at all. So if for some reason that battery runs flat again within between now and February, Anthea, and you don't get any joy from that supplier, please do let us know and we'll sort it out.
Okay, so to bear in mind here, CPA cover of 6 months, the battery itself a warranty of a year, and that's a really important point, Wendy. So if you replace the battery halfway through that warranty, you don't start at day one again. You remain halfway through the warranty with the replacement.
Yes, and it applies to geysers and anything else, and the consumers get very upset about this. But the idea is that the manufacturer warrants that product for 6 months, a year, whatever, and he's got to give you something that works for that time and after that, so that you don't get a whole new warranty with each replacement.
An important point. Thank you, Anthea. And please hold your ground there. The man has no right to say that to you. If you do have a further problem with the battery, you certainly should call him and expect that it should be replaced if it's still within the battery's warranty. That's where we've got to say goodbye. Wendy, lovely to have you with us as always. And I look forward to chatting to you again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pippa.
Wendy Nola, our consumer journalist. Her email address one last time, consumer@nola.co.za, spelled K-N-O-W-L-E-R.